Thank you for joining us on Feed the Crew. If you haven't already, please subscribe and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to be a guest or suggest a topic, go to our website, feedthecrewpodcast.com. If you love the show and want to support us, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/feedthecrew. So, Steve, I'm going to have you introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us about yourself.
Well, my name is Steve Zweifel, and I've been in the music business since I was about 18, I guess. And I grew up in St. Louis, and I worked with Gibraltar, a regional band out of St. Louis. And then I worked for a lighting company in Missouri, out of Union, Missouri. It was P&B Lighting, went by several names. And I toured with Heart, Kansas, Styx. Then I moved to Nashville in 86, worked with the Oak Ridge Boys and Faith Hill's first tour.
Awesome.
And so I did about everything. Started out as a lighting person, lighting designer. Then I started working for the groups themselves. And I was a guitar tech, stage manager, rigger, you name it.
That certainly is the way of the old days, more so than the newer days where, you know, we learned things organically and learned different departments and figured out what we liked best and what we were really good at and what people wanted us to do and work with us to do. We ended up doing a little bit of everything in those days. It seems to be a little less and less these days.
Yeah. That's probably only my only regret is sticking to my actual goal, so which I was hoping to be a lighting designer. And once that didn't happen, then, you know, it was much, much easier to transform into different roles than it would seem today. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but I know in the past few years, I keep up with social media and different groups, and I learn a lot just by what has changed. You know, I was from the old analog area and then I transformed into digital, but it's nothing like what's going on today. And so I still learn a lot by trying to keep up with social media.
But you actually retired from the industry at this point, am I right? Okay.
Yeah, after 26 years, I had health problems and I was touring all the time. And when you come home for 2 weeks, you can't get a major diagnosis. You know, it was really difficult and I needed a break. And then after I took a break, I just couldn't see me getting back into it again. By then I had gotten married and I enjoyed sleeping in my own bed and not on a bus rolling down the highway at 80 miles an hour. And that's what actually got me off the road was health issues. But
your wife kept you that way because you wanted to stay with her, huh?
Oh, no, she was fine with me going away. She could see what it was doing to me. And so she didn't appreciate that. And I'm still married to this day. So
that's
to be said
thing.
For that.
Yeah.
I quit about 2000. So we're
that's
around.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Early 2000.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in this early on? Starting at 18, that's young. It's not, you know, unheard of, but that's young.
It was a different time back then. I had a draft card and a draft number, and I could have graduated high school and a year early, but I didn't. I stayed in school, so I couldn't. I knew I wasn't going to go to college, and I didn't want to be drafted. So I stayed around for another year and went a couple hours a week. I always had a job. I've been working since I was 14. I needed something, but I didn't know what. And school was very boring to me. And I graduated high school in 74. When I graduated high school, it stopped the war in Vietnam. Then I was free. And then, and like I said, I always had a job, but they kept laying me off. And it was very difficult times in the 70s for all kinds of manufacturing jobs. I mean, I didn't have a college degree, so there really wasn't a whole lot set up for me. But I started hearing about a group, Gibraltar, in St. Louis. Friends of mine were telling me about them, and I started hanging around them on all my free time. They were a regional group, and they had originals, and they played cover tunes too, but we traveled all around the Midwest. and from St. Louis to Indiana to Chicago to Oklahoma, everywhere in the Midwest, and then started buying lighting gear from B&B Lighting in Union, Missouri. And I said, you guys need me working for you. And 2 weeks later, I was on a Kansas tour. So that's how that started.
Did you go by way of having mentors in that time frame? I mean, how were you learning these things? Was it something that you just really picked up quickly, or someone that helped you along the way?
Yeah, I would say that I had the musicians in the first band, Gibraltar, were really helping me understand what they were doing and what they were trying to do. And I was an equal member of the band. We never made any money because we always put all of our money back into the shows. And so we, we had a great production.
Right.
And I just learned by finally just, tearing stuff apart, getting into it, getting shocked, getting electrocuted, doing all those things you really shouldn't do. And once I started working for the lighting company, like I said, in 2 weeks, I was working with Kansas. I went from going around playing real small clubs to Kansas was really big at that time. And the Monolith tour was the big tour that I did. But the one before that, the Dust in the Wind tour, I don't remember what it was called, but those were great guys. And I learned a lot on that tour. And then I worked for Hart. I did Hart in the winter and Kansas in the summer for about 7 years in a row.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Especially being so young in the industry. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's probably one of the very few things I was ever, my luck and timing, which right. I'm really bad at, came together. And because I really don't feel like I'm a lucky person. When I look back at those times, I was lucky. I had convinced somebody, that I could do these things. So that's what got me in the business.
That's great. So what were the next steps for you then? You spent, you got to Kansas, which got you to Hart. What were the next steps after that?
Well, since I wanted to be a lighting designer, and I had worked very closely with the lighting designer who was the designer for Hart, and I was one of the truss guys. I was always on the truss during the show doing a spotlight. And I was also the guy who focused all the lights. And back in those days, there weren't safety harnesses and none of that stuff. I hung upside down from 40 feet and focused all different kinds of instruments and knew all the instruments. And my only chance at that actually became with Hart. The lighting designer and director at that time was Kurt Johnson, and he was also working with Crystal Gale, and he was doing shows with her in Atlantic City, and he would fly every night after her shows to come out and do our shows. And once the band got wind of that, they were like, what are we going to do if he doesn't show up? Mm-hmm. And the production manager, tour manager, Dick Adams, came to me and said, what do I tell them? And I said, tell them not to worry. I focus all the lights. I know where everything's at. I know all the cues. I know all the spot cues. Tell them not to worry about it. I think the discussion came up one other time, and Nancy stuck up for me and said, what about Steve? And they ended up hiring somebody else. But once that happened, I got to be the lighting designer and director at the World's Fair in New Orleans in 1984. And that, I had the big venue at that fair, could do just about whatever I want. There was a show every night, so I was free, but nothing even became after that. I heard a couple of calls, but it wasn't what I wanted to do. And so then after that, I said, well, maybe it's better that I work for the group themselves and not be a vendor. So I thought it would keep me busier, and it did. So that's how that happened.
So which group were you working for at that point?
Well, after the World's Fair in 84, then I went, I did the last, it was Hart and Kansas together on that tour. We call it the Who's On First Tour. because they used to rotate between who was going to open and who was going to close. And we actually had two lighting systems. One for Kansas was ground supported and Hearts was up above flying. And that was my rig. And then I was pretty much lost. I felt like I hadn't done the things I wanted to do yet. And I just was still working with the lighting company, and I had done some things for them to help them get into the country music. They had Charlie Daniels, they had Waylon Jennings, and they had the Oak Ridge Boys. And I knew the guys with the Oak Ridge Boys, and I went to the Fox Theater in St. Louis, and I helped get that whole show up and running. And they wanted to hire me, and I wasn't doing anything else. And so I went to work for them, and I worked for them for 8 years. They were nice. Really, really good to me. They had a rock and roll band, and that's what I was supposed to do, was take care of the band. I was actually a stage manager.
Oh, so at that point you transitioned into stage management.
Yeah, that, and the equipment manager, and had them. I mean, like I said, they had a big rock and roll band behind them and big rock and roll egos to boot. And so I learned pretty quick about that. And I don't know, it was, I had no issues with the four singers at all. They were great to me. I stayed around for 8 years. I had health care. I was, I was home generally 150 days a year. I couldn't beat it at the time.
Right. And,
So I moved to Nashville, and I still have a house in Nashville, and I'm living in the Chicago area now.
That took you to Nashville.
Yeah.
8 years with the Oak Ridge Boys.
And then I went. I had had enough of the band. The guys, the singers were great, and then I worked with, was on a couple of shows with Faith Hill when she first came out. And I got along with her band and helped them out on the same shows a couple times, and I ended up working for her. And
I bet she was very nice to work with.
She was unbelievable. She was so sweet. She gave, it was just me, a monitor guy, and the front of house guy, Buford Jones. We had our own bus. The band wasn't allowed on our bus unless they got permission from her. It was, she took care of us. I mean, it was wonderful. And I really hated to leave there. When she started really, after she really bust open, and she was really, I was there the night she met Tim McGraw, I saw all that go down, and all these other opportunities that she was getting at the time. She was being told that, you need to get rid of this band. It happens all the time. You needed this band, and we need to do these things, which was totally different from what she probably really wanted to do at the time, but it worked out for her. I got right. Nothing against her. She was wonderful.
That always happens to musicians as they start to progress. The record companies, promoters step in, and then they want to do it their way, and they start telling the artist how it's going to be, even though the artist has been
handling
all those things for years.
It's that isolation thing, it's the record company people get around the artist. And, when she was around us and touring, with her band, the best band I have ever worked with closely, They would do anything I asked them to do. They were wonderful. I mean, I can't say enough good about them, but what happens is people from the record company and stuff, they start getting around and they start pulling the artist away and making us like we're not in the picture at all for any changes at all.
And, you become the second class citizens to them.
Pretty much. Yeah. That's the way it felt to me. And she never made me feel like that. The band never made me feel like that. But other people, accountants and other people, were getting involved. And then, and it broke my heart to tell her, what they're offering me to pay me this year, I can't leave town on. you know. And she was, I hope I can afford to pay you. You will be able to afford me. Anytime you want, you can pick up the phone right now and make it happen.
So how long were you with Faith Hill?
Probably almost 2 years.
Okay.
It was right at the end of my touring days. I had worked for Billy Dean between her and Oak Ridge Boys, but he didn't have anything really going on record-wise, and it's probably one of the only tours I actually regret even doing. He was with Reba's Starstruck production, and he was on their label and their management company, and we were opening up for Reba, and she was using 18 trucks. And here we are, you know, she has to cancel dates because of her throat, and we're out, you know, on the West Coast, no pay, no food, no per diem. Let's feed the roadies. I went home, you know, I would go home. I had so many advantage miles from the Oak Ridge Boys. If they flew, you would fly. That's gotcha. That was their rule. Otherwise, they'd be on the bus too, you know. I would fly home. I said, well, I'm not going to sit out here and spend money.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
Right.
So.
And that is the way things used to go. And I think we're more and more, that's where my idea came to have the podcast Feed the Crew. There was a long time ago when they didn't think about those things. We became the second class citizens to many of the, you know, powers that be on job sites. And it's not so much the case anymore. And I hope that my listeners out there can correct me if I'm wrong. Tell me who, you know, is still not treating the crew very well. But
I think it was a thing where they felt like you weren't indispensable. There was a million people who would want your job. You know, I've been told that a couple of times. I go, yeah, but can they do it?
Right. That's right.
You want to train them? Well, you know, and now all the things that are going on with the pandemic and all this stuff, I mean, I've signed a bunch of petitions. I wish I could get more involved now that I'm actually retired and I don't have to work, you know, to help. I mean, venues, all the good venues and all the creativity that's being just Dyfold. Surpassed.
Yeah.
Just, you know, nobody's even thinking about that. We're so busy, distracted with all the things that are going on with our government and the pandemic. It's the creativity that is lost is going to really come back to haunt us society-wise. People would just be sheeple and just don't understand that, you know, when you close down, when people can't go to see concerts or be involved in music or the arts in any way, and you have to stay home, it really is devastating to a lot of people that nobody thinks about. And that would be us, you know.
Absolutely.
So I wish I could help more. I've got the time now, so.
Well, we have had lists of some of our industry advocates. And if you have a moment to go to our website and check out the ones that we've been looking at and telling people about, let me know if you know of others that we're missing, of others that we should be looking at. And maybe we'll be sparking your interest into, you know, a different advocacy that is listed up there. But
well, now that you and I have connected. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that you and I have connected and you have my email and phone number and stuff, just let me know and give me the links and I'll look into it. And
absolutely.
Anything I can do to help this business, especially all my brothers and sisters that cannot work right now. And they're trying to figure out how do you, you know, I was always lucky because I always had a million other things that I was able to do, not work-wise. I would drive, I worked at the airport. I did all kinds of things that most people will not do, but I always worked, always, you know, no matter if I had downtime. If it was more than a month, I'd be working somewhere.
Right.
I just always did that, but a lot of people can't do that. And it's harder and harder as the years go by. And especially now, I don't know what you could possibly do, you know,
right,
that wouldn't be putting yourself at risk. That's why I got called back to work. I was working up until a month ago, and then they shut it down in Illinois again. I refused to go back to work. I said, no, I'm just not going to do it. I'm old enough now. I've got Medicare, I've got Social Security. Why should I put myself and my wife at risk? You know,
absolutely agree with you. Absolutely.
But most people aren't that lucky. And that's only the second time in my life I can say the timing and my luck happened at the same time, you know, because
you can do that.
I should still be working, and I will work, but I just don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to do what I did, you know.
Right.
I was a field technician for gaming in Illinois, video gaming. Okay. And I'd go around and fix games and going in all these places where they can't have dine-in meals, but the machines can stay on because the state makes money, you know. And there's people sitting there, they're not wearing masks, and I have to wear a mask and try to work.
Right.
And it's a miracle. There are only two guys that I know of that do the same job ever tested positive, you know. But I just said, you know what? I just don't think it's worth it to me anymore. Now, I might go back to that, but it won't be while this is going on.
Right, right.
I still have my license and, you know.
Exactly. But yeah, better safe than sorry, for sure. And you're saying, you just said two people that you were working with tested positive. That's a risk. You're absolutely looking at the reality of a risk.
Absolutely. You always got to have it in your mind, and especially in this business, it's a risk versus reward. You know, mm-hmm. when you're asked to do things, they're A, not safe, or not really what you want to do morally, or, you know, whatever the case may be, you've got to look out for yourself, because nobody is really going to extend over you. It's very rare when people will say, no, I don't want them to do that. Nobody's going to do that. Not in this time, I don't think. I could be wrong. There's a lot of good artists out, but for me, I had to end it.
So were you always into fixing video games, or was that something you decided to do after you retired from this industry?
No, my wife works for the Chicago Tribune.
Okay.
And we moved up here. I didn't want to, but she wanted me to, and so I had to. And we still have the house in Nashville. And I just applied online. I said, there's a tech job I could do, and it might be all right, you know.
Right.
4 hours after I put my online application in, they called me. And I went out there and I started working for them. And I was supposed to be being trained. And the guy who was training me was one of the bosses. And he moved so fast, you couldn't even... And I knew enough about troubleshooting that I said, hey, after 2 weeks, I said, you know, just put me out there.
Just let me at it.
I'll figure it out. And I did. I did. There was other people, they had to go do ride-alongs for 2 months. And I couldn't figure that out. And I wasn't about to do that. I said, no, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So I ended up training 3 or 4 different guys.
Yeah, I would imagine some of the background that you have made it easier to grasp the concept of what they were trying to do in fixing these games, for sure.
Well, it has a hard drive in it, just like, you know, your computer. And I worked in a big computer center before, so I pretty much knew that was all what was happening there. And you couldn't do anything technically with the hard drive or the actual CPU without somebody from the state being present, because they didn't want you guys trying to fix the games. So there was no way to do that.
There's fixing the game and there's repairing the game, right?
Exactly. It was all right, interesting enough, but definitely not worth the money to do that anymore.
Okay.
Right now, you know. else.
Sure. Oh yeah, no, of course, right now. So I wanted to ask you a few fun questions about yourself. going back to your career in the live events and touring, because you were working for a touring lighting company for most mm-hmm. of that. What is one of the most memorable moments of your career?
Three or four flashed through my head. One
you can
was
give us more playing, than one.
Yeah, one was playing on the White House lawn with the Oak Ridge Boys. Another couple really massive shows with Hart in Stadium, like the Cotton Bowl with Van Halen opening up. You know, right when they first came out. And you know, at the World's Fair, there were several incidences. You know, I mean, like I said, there was everybody who participated in the fair country-wise, like Japan, China, and all these, everybody had their own night at our facility. Plus, we had touring acts coming through, top-notch touring acts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we always had something going on there. So there was a lot of memorable moments there at the World's Fair in New Orleans. You can just imagine in New Orleans, and I think I worked for 3 months straight, and finally my crew that worked with me in lighting, they got me out to a camp out on Lake Pontchartrain. They said, "You're not coming back. You're staying here for a couple of days. You're driving us nuts." So they actually took care of me and left me out at the camp for a couple of days because I wouldn't take off. You know, I always wanted to make sure what was going on.
That sounds like me, taking that personal responsibility and ownership, and you just have a hard time letting it go and walking away.
Well, you know, and at that time, when I finally got to that point, it was the women who worked with me that were doing all the focusing and changing out the, I mean, we had shopping carts at the end of the night. We'd bring the truss down. They would go by, they'd pull everything out, and we'd repatch everything, and we'd be ready to go for the next show the mm-hmm. following day. We did that every night. And once all these ladies, I had like three or four girls that worked with me. Once they got that stuff down, that's when they said, "Now you can take off because we know how to do this.
We got it."
Yeah. And we got an electrician that can do the patch. So, you know, and when you think about that stuff, like as far as like doing the patch, it was a hardwire patch. It wasn't a digital patch. You know, they were just coming out with that stuff then. That was 84. And so I'm sure it's all, this is a lot different now. And like I said, I learned a lot of stuff just by following along on social media.
Right. So tell us about the White House lawn.
That's a very interesting day. I think like 2 weeks before that, we were in Laughlin, Nevada at doing a casino show. Somebody broke into my hotel room, stole my briefcase, and my wallet was in there. So I didn't have my original ID, and had my social security card in there and all that stuff. And they already had all my documents. The Oak Ridge Boys office did.
Right. And
so I could basically get into the White House, but then they kept bringing me back to the gate and wanted fingerprints. You know, I thought they were going to ask for DNA, you know, but couldn't figure out if I was the real guy or if I was just putting on a show. And that's when, at that time, it was George Bush Sr. was president, and he was a big fan of the Oak Ridge Boys. And
yes,
and we played in this little bitty band shell on the South Lawn. You know, they had a big band, you know, they had a 7-piece band plus four singers. And that whole stage was just rocking and rolling. And, you know, it was a barbecue, you know, for George Bush.
That's
and
awesome.
Just learning about the security there and going in there. And I think there was a Colonel Higgins in Lebanon was hung from a bridge or something that the day before. And they were all really upset about that. So we had to unload a 53-foot trailer, and the Secret Service had to go through everything.
Right.
Everything. And just the way it goes, you know, took all day to set up, but that's what you got to do. There's no arguing there.
Right. Oh yeah. No. I'm looking forward to some more Secret Service stories. As we get through January, we're going to be talking to some of the folks that just did this inauguration and people are going to rehash some of the Secret Service stories, but it's your story goes back as far as my story with Secret Service, because I haven't been involved that closely with Secret Service since the early 90s.
Yeah,
in fact, even though I worked on the Obama inauguration, I was far enough removed from the White House that I didn't need those types of credentials in dealing with that kind of Secret Service.
Yeah, everybody took their wives and stuff. My wife said, I don't want to go. You're going to be working all day. I don't want to watch you. And I don't want to go walk through the White House with, you know, everybody. And, you know, they all got private tours and all that stuff. But I didn't. I stayed working. I stayed on the stage. And President Bush showed up at Opryland in Nashville. Didn't tell anybody he was coming. Showed up backstage at an Oak Ridge Boys show. And he walked into the dressing room and bass player said, "Oh, Mr. President, you remember Steve?" And he goes, "Yeah, he was the only one who worked all day." So when they say they don't remember, I don't recall.
They do.
He knew who I was. I don't know if it was because my ID was missing or he really did see me.
Well, that might be. It might be. We're watching that one. That's the one we're watching over there.
Yeah, one of the guys who worked with me at the time went up and hit the kick drum pretty hard. Four or five guys came right up to the stage and said, "Don't do that," without telling us. You know, they didn't know what it was. I mean, I probably did like 600 shows with Hart and about 300 or 400 with Kansas. I did some with Styx on the, we had the lighting account with Styx, and I went out and did a couple of shows with a guy who was his wife was having a baby, and filled in a couple of shows, and then I did the whole Mr. Roboto tour, and then that was it with them. But I've probably done about 4,000 shows in my life.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's sometimes I look back now and I think, did I really do that? Or am I just imagining that, you know, because now everything's so mundane compared to getting off the tour bus and, you know, rocking it all day long, every day.
And right.
Like something way in the past. Doesn't even seem real.
But it was.
Oh, yeah.
I talk about my career.
I have documents. Prove it.
You have documents. All your backstage passes and everything.
I sure do. They're on my Instagram page. You can go there and see that.
Oh, you'll have to give us your Instagram information so we can send our listeners over to you.
It's just at Steve Zwacker.
Okay.
Yeah, I left my, you know, I had to put my, I just put everything out there. And believe it or not, you would think that my name is so bizarre, my last name, that I wouldn't have to put my full name on Facebook, but there's actually 5 Stephen J. Zweifels in the country. Right. And I was like, there's only 2,000 in North America with the last name. Yeah, there's 4 other ones besides me. But, you know, I'm easy to get a hold of, you know, emails, same way, you know, at yahoo.com.
So I think my last question for you, Steve, is what advice do you have for the future of the industry?
I think at this point, I would say everybody needs to stay safe and then focus on when this breaks. It's going to have to break at some point. I don't know when that'll be, but stay focused and be safe. And everybody needs to look out for themselves, you know, and find something else to do that doesn't sap your creativity, so that if you get in a down part of your life or your career for any length of time, if you don't stay busy, it will ruin you. I just hope that everybody, we get this, the business back together. And I think it will be an incredible event when it all starts coming back together. When we start doing shows again, it'll be, who knows? I might have something to do with any of that. I don't know. Now that I have so much time, but just to stay focused and got to hope for the best. Stay focused and stay safe.
Excellent advice. Thank you for that.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Check out our website at feedthecrewpodcast.com for more information, as well as links to all of our episodes, bulletins, and social media.
When you're hungry for
inspiration,
information,
friends, and laughter,
join us.
Join us.
Join us.
On Feed the Crew.